We are in Ezekiel chapter 38 as we're trying to flesh out the story of the battle of Gog Magog that is in Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 through 10. A very brief story told there, but much broader told here in Ezekiel's version. And this is most definitely a battle that takes place after a long period of peace and prosperity in a promised land that has had people gathered in from all over the world. And so that's another reason to believe that Ezekiel's 38 and 39 are parallel to Revelation chapter 20. So last time I threw out into your consideration the reality that Gog is an ancient Babylonian area word. It's an ancient Sumerian era word that means brilliant one. And that is an exact parallel to Satan's Hebrew name, Hillel, that's found in Isaiah chapter 14. In our modern Bibles, a lot of our English Bibles, they prefer to use the Latin term, which is Lucifer, light bearer, but it still means brilliant one. And so everything that I'm going to tell you from here on out, I will keep reminding you that Gog is actually Satan. There's no reason not to have confidence in that. So chapter 38, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, set your face toward Gog, that is, against Satan, of the land of Magog, which would be literally the place of the brilliant one, but it's a place that's actually located in what we call modern-day Turkey. The chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And so Meshech and Tubal are in that same general vicinity in this swath of land across the northern Mesopotamia region, there by the Black and Caspian Seas. And prophesy against him and say, thus says he who is God, behold, I am against you, O Gog, brilliant one, Satan, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. I'm going to turn you about and put hooks into your jaws, and I will bring you out and all your army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed in full armor, a great host, all of them with buckler and shield, wielding swords. And then he starts going into a list of other places that are associated with this invasion led by Satan. It lists Persia, which is just the ancient name. Actually, it's not too ancient because it was actually beginning of the 1900s name still, of Iran. Kush, which I told you is a little bit problematic because the Kushites end up being both in Mesopotamia but also down in Africa. And so Kush is a name associated with a place near Persia, but it's also the ancient name for Ethiopia, down south of Egypt. And so it's a little hard to tell which place is being mentioned here. And Put are all with them. Put is associated with Libya today. It was north coast of Africa. And all of these are with them with shield and helmet. Gomer, which is also in the country that we call Turkey today. It's in northern Turkey. Beth Togarma, which is kind of Armenia region, Azerbaijan. From the uttermost parts of the north with all his hordes, many peoples are with you. So this is a description of where this invasion army is predominantly coming from. And in my Living in the Last Days Prophecy seminar notes, which you can find online in the PDF resources section of the main website, intotheword.net, I have a chart that takes note of some passages of Scripture that we had describing during the millennium a highway of holiness, which connected ancient Assyria with Jerusalem and Jerusalem with ancient Egypt, which ancient Egypt also went down deep into Africa along the Nile River. And so I've done a little bitty curved line because of the globe thing on this flat map that goes from where ancient Assyria was, which I went ahead and just started it at the town of Susa, and take it down through the Middle East, lower Middle East where Jerusalem is, and then down deep into Egypt. I think I took it clear down to the cataracts, the first cataracts of the Nile, which is how far down Egypt used to be. And then I started putting on the outline of this map, because it's got modern-day countries on it, all these places that are mentioned here in Ezekiel 38. And do you know what I found? I found out that they are on the fringes of the Highway of Holiness corridor. And this is why I think that happened. And I told you to keep in mind something from the book of Zechariah, chapter number 14, that when the millennium comes, all the mortals, and of course the immortals are going to come along too, but all the mortals who are making their mind up about Jesus during the millennium, they are required to come to Jerusalem and present themselves in worship and loyalty to him every year at the Feast of Tabernacles. And so they would be walking along the Highway of Holiness in order to get there for the Feast of Tabernacles. And so it would appear that all these mortals are going to be situated along this Highway of Holiness corridor. And then comes the next part in Zechariah 14. Any country or region that refuses to come for the annual Feast of Tabernacles, God will turn off their rain. Now, what's going to happen? Even in a perfect world, because the new heaven and new earth have come into existence and they are in their best shape. We've gone back to Genesis chapters 1 and 2. That's what the earth looks like. It is lush, it is prosperous, it is a wonderful place. But if you turn off the tap and don't water it, what's going to happen? Things will dry out. And if your crops dry out, you don't have enough to eat. And so what would the people who rebel against Jesus do when he turns off the taps and they can't grow their crops? They're going to move, because that's what happens when drought sets into a place. And more than likely, they're going to move farther away, not closer to Jerusalem. And so on my map, I see Gomer, Magog, Beth Togarmah, Meshech, Tubal. I see them north, farther north from the Highway of Holiness corridor. I see Persia off to the east and northeast from that corridor. I see Put off to the west of that corridor. And I see the other Kush, Ethiopia, to the south and east of that corridor. So we effectively have people that don't want to do what Jesus says, don't want to do things God's way, moving farther and farther away from Jerusalem, away from Jesus, and more than likely, they're leaving behind them dry lands, because God had turned off the tap, and they keep trying to find a new place where they can grow crops in this world until they're finally in these positions at the time that Satan is released from his abyss at the end of the 1,000 years. And these people are ticked off already. It doesn't take much for Satan, Gog, to convince them, you don't have to put up with this. Let's march on Jerusalem, put down this king, and take everything over for ourselves. And guess what we read in the scripture here in Ezekiel 38? Exactly that sort of stuff. Ezekiel 38, verse 7. Be ready. Keep ready, you and all your hosts that are assembled about you. Be a guard for them. After many days, you will be mustered. That is, you'll be gathered together into a group. But notice the many days. In latter years, you will go up against the land that is restored from war, the land whose people were gathered from many peoples upon the mountains of Israel. Now notice that. This is talking about people being gathered into the Promised Land area and being there for a long time without war. That is exactly the description we've been reading about in the millennial passages of the Old Testament, isn't it? They were gathered from many peoples upon the mountains of Israel, which had been a continual waste. But its peoples were brought out from the peoples and now dwell securely, all of them. So now this gets back to the idea that this can't possibly be a reference to the return from the Assyrian and Babylonian exiles. Because even though Israel did come back, they did not come back to great peace and prosperity. They still had a lot of trouble. It can't be about the current situation of the modern state of Israel, which most certainly have come back from all over the place to the ancient land of Israel, but they are not living in peace and security. Ever since their declaration of independence more than 70 years ago, they have been under constant threat. In fact, they have come to the point where they believe the only solution to some of this is to build fences, to build walls for security. That'll become important in a moment. So this is obviously not about the present time. Continuing, verse 9, you will advance, coming on like a storm. You will be like a cloud covering the land, you and all that your hordes and many peoples with you. So the description here is like they're a great cloud covering the land. In the book of Revelation, it's like they are the sand of the seashore. So bunches and bunches of them. But keep in mind that any fraction of all of the mortals that were brought into the millennium would still be a very large number. Verse number 10. Thus says he who is God, on that day, thoughts will come into your mind and you will devise an evil scheme. And you will say, I will go up against the land of unwalled villages. There we are. This is a place that is so peaceful that people don't even put fences and walls up. That's the millennial kingdom being described there. Continuing, I will fall upon the quiet people who dwell securely, all of them dwelling without walls and having no bars or gates. Again, that is much more easily applied to the millennial period than any other period in history. And what will they be going to do? Verse 12, to seize spoil and carry off plunder, to turn your hand against the waste places that are now inhabited and the people who were gathered from the nations, who have acquired livestock and goods, who dwell at the center of the earth. And in the millennial period, Jerusalem is at the center of everything. And so this is all very descriptive of the end of the millennial period. I am just convinced without any doubt that this chapter is describing what happens at the end of the millennium. Now, verse 13 throws a couple more names into the mix. Sheba and Dedan. And I put those two on my chart because Dedan is the ancient name for southern Saudi Arabia. Sheba is the ancient name for the modern country of Yemen on the southern side of the Arabian Peninsula. And you will see, if you check my little chart, that they also represent people at the fringes of the Highway of Holiness corridor. And therefore, I am pretty sure represents those that have migrated farther and farther away from a place that is living in peace and prosperity under the King of Kings and Lord of Lords at Jerusalem. And then we have the merchants of Tarshish are mentioned here. Another one of those passages that can be a little bit confusing. We have in the Old Testament a Tarshish that seems to be related to some place off of the Indian Ocean, because King Solomon tried to build ships on the Gulf of Aqaba, which is an offshoot of the Red Sea, which is itself an offshoot of the Indian Ocean, in order to take trade goods that direction. But we have in the New Testament a reminder, actually it's also in the Old Testament, that there is a Tarshish way out, outside of the Mediterranean entrance in southern Spain. And so I don't know which one is being referenced here, but it's the idea that someplace far away from the Highway of Holiness corridor that I've been talking to you about. And so what are these guys about? They're going to say to you, have you come to seize spoil? And I think that should be understood as something exciting to them. Have you assembled your host to carry off plunder? To carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to seize great spoil? So these guys, Sheba, Dedan, they're all down to the south. Tarshish, possibly off to the south as well, maybe off to the far west. But they get wind of this invading army under Gog, under Satan, heading for the center of great prosperity in the New World. And they say, oh, we want us some of that. We are on board with plundering that place. And then God says this, therefore, verse 14, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, thus says he who is God, on that day when my people Israel are dwelling securely, will you not know it? Will you not understand it? You will come from your place out of the uttermost parts of the north. So Gog, Satan, apparently does his work up to the north and gathers all of those groups, those rebels from that direction and heads south. You will, let's see, verse number 14 again. Thus says he who is God, on that day when my people Israel are dwelling securely, will you not know it? You will come from your place out of the uttermost parts of the north, you and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great host, a mighty army. Don't be surprised about the low tech there, because you remember when we were reading through some of our millennial passages that all of the warfare becomes a thing of the past. Weapons of warfare get turned into agricultural implements instead. And so there would be no reason for high-tech weaponry being built during all of the years of the millennium. So these guys are going to have to utilize low tech, which can be adopted pretty quickly. And so horses are kind of the muscle power of low-tech warfare. Verse 16, you will come up against my people Israel like a cloud covering the land. In the latter days, I'll bring you against my land that the nations may know me. And this is a permissive sort of thing here. God says, I know you're going to do it, so let's get it on. Come on, I'm going to bring you. I'm going to let you. So that the nations may know me when through you, O Gog, O brilliant one, so-called, Satan, his real character name, meaning the adversary, I will vindicate my holiness before their eyes. So those millennial mortals that we immortals have been trying to train up to trust Jesus and believe Jesus and accept Jesus as their Savior, as their Lord, as their King. They'll be watching what God does with this invasion. And it will be kind of it'll be the icing on the cake. It'll be the absolute final thing that makes them put their trust in Jesus is that he will protect them from such an invasion. Verse number 17, thus says he who is God, are you he of whom I spoke in former days by my servants, the prophets of Israel, who in those days prophesied for years that I would bring you against them? Now, that's an interesting verse right there, because basically God says in the far future, at the tail end of the millennium, hey, Gog, you're the guy that I told my people about way back in the time of Ezekiel, which is, I think it's kind of funny. It's like a closed loop on this prophecy here. But on that day, the day that Gog shall come against the land of Israel, declares he who is God, my wrath will be roused in my anger. So God is going to be ticked. It's like, I'm done. For in my jealousy, or my zealousy, and in my blazing wrath, I declare, on that day there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. The fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep on the ground and all the people who are on the face of the earth shall quake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down and the cliffs shall fall and every wall shall tumble to the ground. So we have some sort of seismic event that takes place right around the same time as this invasion. I kind of get the impression that these regions through which Gog, Satan, and his army advances as they're heading for Jerusalem gets evacuated. We immortals, perhaps, just tell everybody, get out of the way, just move. We're going to move out of the way for a while until God takes care of this. And so as Gog brings his forces into this trap area, this place where God has decided to do away with him and his forces, an earthquake hits. Verse number 21, I will summon a sword against Gog on all my mountains, declares he who is God. Every man's sword will be against his brother. That is a common characteristic in some of the Old Testament battles during the conquest and during the period of the judges, is that God would make the enemy attack each other. In the book of Zechariah, you might appreciate how that could happen, because in his description of the Battle of Armageddon, God basically melts, liquefies the tongues and the eyes of the people, And that would, of course, cause them to just start striking out against everyone around them, which would mean they'd attack each other. And so that, I believe, seems to be what God does here with Satan or Gog's forces. Verse 22, with pestilence and bloodshed, I will enter into judgment with him. I will rain upon him and his hordes. This word keeps getting used over and over again because it becomes part of a name later. And the many people who are with him, torrential rains and hailstones, fire and sulfur. And so here we have another element we see in Old Testament stories about divine warfare against troublemakers. We even see it in some of the wrath events of the book of Revelation and the day of the Lord. Lots and lots of rain, a driving rain, hailstones, monster-sized hailstones. Remember, in the seventh wrath event, some of them were weighing like 75 pounds. That's quite the artillery shell landing on the ground. And then fire, which might represent lightning, of course. Sulfur, which is going to be a chemical that would cause a lot of trouble. And so, verse 23, I will show my greatness and my holiness and make myself known in the eyes of many nations. Then they will know that I am he who is. So we basically just saw here the invasion. God sends an earthquake. God sends all sorts of plagues and trouble. The people start fighting amongst themselves. And we even have the fire that is mentioned in the Revelation passage about how God destroys this army before they hardly even get a chance to cause any trouble for Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and his people that are at the heart of his kingdom there at Jerusalem. Chapter 39 is going to be more details. So come back tomorrow, and we will get back into the Word.